Welcome. Welcome to A Taste of, the radio program which looks at various cultures and their languages, and we have a little in-depth knowledge on each language. This program is brought to you in collaboration with the International School of Languages, and today we have Richard Twigg, who will be talking to us about English. Hi, Richard.
Hi, thank you.
Richard, okay, how would you define English? What is English to you? What does it mean to be English?
Nowadays, it's sort of it's very broad. I think it's a lot of people associated with being very stiff upper lip, incredibly polite, and always very, very helpful. That was generally, you get lost and you ask an English bobby, he'll always be helpful and give you directions. On the other hand, if you want to lose weight, go to England and eat the food, because it's really bad. So it has ups and downs.
Okay. So for you, English is just England?
Yes. Yeah. I think that it's the green, green grass of home.
Okay. In this culture of global languages, it's quite interesting.
Yeah.
Well, that's, I suppose, because you're English.
Exactly. That's the sort of thing.
So if I had to ask you, Richard, what is a typical song or sound that is English to you?
I think for me, it's the Beatles is typically English. It personifies everything about the English and their success story. And one song in particular that I thought would be quite appropriate is because people are going to be learning the language. I've chosen the song "Help" because in a strange kind of way, they're coming to the school asking for help in learning the language. So, well, that was my reason for choosing the song.
Okay, and now we're going to listen to it for a little while.
Help, I need somebody. Help, not just anybody. Help, you know I need someone. Help! When I was younger, so much younger than today, anybody's help in any way. But now these days are gone, and I'm not so self-assured. Now I find I've changed my mind and opened up the doors. Help me if you can, I'm feeling down, and I do appreciate you being round. Help me get my feet back on the ground.
What a great song, what a great era, Richard. I really agree. That is a great song. What did it remind you while it was playing?
If you listen to the lyrics, it's sort of, you could tie it in with business people and asking for help with their language. When they were young, life was easy. As they've got older, they need to learn more about the language. And they need to get the feedback on the ground to be able to progress, to go further in business, because whether we like it or not, English is the international language of business, and it's becoming, in this globalized world, more and more necessary for people to not only be able to speak, but to be able to communicate, to present themselves, to get their message across clearly in English. And more people are finding that, you know, they're learning it at school, but then they lose it and they need to come back. And this is where I thought that the song is very appropriate, particularly
absolutely.
For business people.
Absolutely. So if we go back to the scenario of these business people, and I'm asking you now as a teacher, what would you introduce into the language learning? What are the concepts that these people tend to have more need of than others?
For the business people, it's sort of it's presentation skills, and it's being able to relate to the English and the English nuances and sort of the fact that the English generally can be quite cold.
Yes. So you're looking at forms of communication, isn't
yes.
it?
Yeah. And not only the sort of the verbal, but the non-verbal, the body language that goes with it. That the English, generally speaking, shake hands once and that's it. Whereas in other cultures, they shake hands and they hug or they kiss left and right. But the English, that's my personal space.
So they don't kiss the English?
Very, very seldom. In private, sure, but, you know, in business, men and women tend to, I think in Switzerland, they kiss three times.
Yes.
And in other cultures, they kiss left and right, but the English, it would be sort of, you know, it's bad enough that they actually shake your hand, so sometimes it can be...
Is this a reflection of the personality?
Yes, because I think it's going back to the stiff upper lip, that the British is sort of, you know, the old image was... The British businessman with his bowler hat and his umbrella hung over his arm.
But you still see the Brits like that?
Yes, I think there's a lot still in society that, you know, they hold on to that Britishness that I think is still there. It's not as strong as it used to be, but I still think there's still a strong current of that.
So for you, the British now is the stiff upper lip,
yeah,
and not very expressive.
Exactly, yeah. The English find it very difficult to express themselves and to express their true feelings.
So if we go back to our communication to our businessman and he's trying to communicate with someone, how are you going to get him to communicate with so many different people?
I think the key thing is that they need to be themselves and not try and be British. They're learning to speak English and they're communicating with another nationality, another nation, but the fact is that...
So let me interrupt you again, yeah. If you don't mind. So I am now, possibly, a multi-speaker here, mm-hmm. okay? And you are going to teach me mm-hmm. the basics on presentation skills. Mm-hmm. What would you tell me? How would you go about it?
It's all down to the delivery. It's pausing for effect. I always say to my students, if you want to learn how to present properly in English, listen to Tony Blair. Take a leaf out of his book. He's one of the best public speakers you'll ever get to listen to.
And what impresses you about Tony Blair exactly?
Nothing. It's just his presentation skills. He has an ability to make you listen to every word, regardless of whether you agree with him or the content. It's just his delivery, that he pauses at the right time, he allows the information to sink in, and we use a word called chunking, and in the presentation language that's really, really important because people start with a message and they think, I want to get to the end, and instead of using the pausing and the chunking, that people have time to actually, and he will pause after each word and make it sound so dramatic, and it's just...
Does he repeat himself too?
Not unnecessarily.
Okay, so there is a repetition. I was being a bit flippant,
yes,
there.
Yes.
Because
I mean the key thing with the presentation language is it's like somebody having a map.
Okay.
And you need to tell them at the beginning of the presentation where you're going. And then during the presentation, you tell them where you are. And at the end, you told them where you've been.
Okay. So content is being manipulated.
Yes.
And when you're manipulating the content, you have to have pauses. Is there anything else that you'd go?
The signposting.
Okay.
So that you need to sort of, you lay it out and you say, I'm going to tell you about these 5 points. And then you discuss the first point, the second point, the third point, the fourth point, the fifth point. And at the end, you tell them what you've told them, sort of like a summary.
And do you think this, I don't know, do you think it's typical English, this style of presentation, or is it using the language?
No, I think it's using the language to great effect. I mean, I think in other languages people present in the same way. But I think that the key thing is being able to get your message across effectively. And native speakers of English tend to be able to push that message across.
I think fluency is an issue, isn't it, when you're coming to learn a language?
Definitely, definitely, because that affects the communication. And the more fluent you are, the more you're going to sound, the more native you're going to sound as a speaker, and the easier it is going to be for people to understand you. Because at the end of the day, the art of communication is to get your message across. You are communicating for a reason.
Yes.
And if you can get that message across in a succinct way that people can understand you, then you've achieved your message. And if it's broken and you lose people half the way through because it's not fluent, people switch off and then your message has not got through.
So if I was learning English, some of these key phrases that I would need to learn would be things like consequently.
Yes. Firstly, secondly.
Which are indicators of language.
They're all indicators, or what sometimes we call signposts, to point the person in the direction. First I'm going to talk about this and then I talk about it. Then I'm going to talk about this and then I talk about it. So, because a lot of the time you know what you want to talk about, but the audience doesn't. So you need to help them and guide them. It's like putting somebody in a city and saying, find point A without any indicators. They might get there in the end, but how successful has their journey been?
Absolutely. Talking about journey, I was thinking about the Beatles a bit over there. They've journeyed. They had quite a journey through their lives.
They certainly have, and from the city that they come from, it's quite amazing, because Liverpool has a pretty poor reputation in England, working class. A lot of the English people struggle to understand the people from Liverpool with their strong accent.
And at that time they had Cilla Black too, that came out of that period
exactly.
of time.
But and she has a much stronger accent than, considering that the four of them came from Liverpool. She has a much stronger Liverpoolian accent than they do.
She does. What was it? Blind date, wasn't
yes,
it?
Yes.
Blind date.
Yeah, yeah.
Matter of fact, when I think about English and English traditions, I often think history. I'm looking at kings and eras, Victorian times, and influences of these different periods on us.
Yeah, and battles and wars that to this day are still as strong as they were time and time ago, with the War of the Roses. The people that live in Yorkshire hate the people that live in Lancashire, and vice versa. And
the social aspect is quite strong in England, isn't
it? Very, very strong.
When I ask you, what does the social aspect mean to you? Because I have my preconceptions of what it means. But
yeah. The one of the social aspects for me is the way that sport divides the country.
Sport?
Yes.
Okay.
That the working class follow football and the middle class follow rugby.
It's so clear cut for you. Yeah. Rugby is not working class.
No, rugby league is working class.
I see. So when you're actually talking to somebody, you have to be clear of these distinctions, even to say what you like.
Exactly.
Really.
Yes. It's very much, I mean, if you look at a game like rugby, it's a north-south divide. There's only, at the moment, one team in the north of England that actually plays in the Guinness Premiership. The rest are all in the south of England.
Okay.
But rugby league is much stronger in the north than it is in the south.
And how does Wales come into that? Is Wales England for you?
Wales is not part of England, no.
Okay. So where does England start and stop? Is it like something like off the M25 or...?
No, England is up to the borders.
Which are?
As far as Berwick, North Newcastle, and then you get Scotland. Wales off to the left.
Okay.
It's pretty clear cut. I mean, the Scottish won the independence from England. I remember going to Edinburgh once, and there was a sign that the Scots said that there was a person selling postcards, I think it was, American English Understood. So even they believe that there's different
yes.
versions of English.
Yes, of course.
A lot of the students that find that come for lessons find the people from Glasgow incredibly difficult. And I say, well, you know, most people do.
The accents are something.
It's very, very strong. Yes.
Will you be able to do any accents for us, Richard?
With difficulty. Don't claim to, but I mean, in Liverpool they talk about a burger, in Yorkshire there's a very strong saying about if they ever does out for nout, make sure they do it for the sen. They're very strong about sort of.
And what does that mean, Richard? Please,
if you ever do anything for nothing, make sure you do it for yourself.
I see.
And the Yorkshire people have a reputation for being very tight-fisted.
What are these stereotypes? Are they stereotypes or always?
They're true, unfortunately. They say that a Yorkshireman is a Scotsman with the generosity squeezed out of him.
Okay, spoken like a true
Yorkshireman.
Okay, so no insult meant over there. Okay, so if I was in York, besides the beautiful historical buildings,
mm-hmm.
and let's go back to food, mm-hmm. what type of food would I have yourself?
Have to be roast beef and Yorkshire pudding.
Okay, and what is Yorkshire pudding?
It's a strange a pancake mixture that is cooked in the oven with incredibly hot oil. And then it hollows out inside. It's anything for foreigners that believe it's a pudding, it's a dessert, it's a sweet, it's not.
I know, as a matter of fact, pudding for us means dessert.
No.
I think for the rest of the world too.
For most people it does, yes. But this Yorkshire pudding it has to be eaten with roast beef. It's a very typical Sunday lunch or Sunday roast. And in most of the pubs or restaurants in York, that would be
Actually, you mentioned something that hits me straight in the eyes when I think about English. That's the pubs.
The pubs. Well, in Malta, we have 365 churches. In York, we have 365 pubs. So it's...
Like with like.
Like with like, exactly.
Okay.
And we have the Minster. And York is the seat of the Archbishop.
That's another thing that is very different to many cultures, is the religion.
Yes, yeah. It's not nearly as strong as it used to be. They're having a lot of problems with people having sort of worrying about their faith, and the turnout at churches is very low at the moment. That's the sort of the Anglican churches.
The Anglican churches and the Roman Catholic churches.
The Roman Catholic churches, but obviously not as strong as in the traditional Italy, Austria.
Because of the history.
For the history, yes. Yeah. Because that's going back to where, my history is terrible, but with the kings and the battles that they had.
I think it had something to do with King Arthur. No, it wasn't. It was, who are the date wives?
Henry VIII, and the bloody tower,
and he changed religion because of his wives, didn't he? Is that typical English?
It's difficult to say. It depends which sort of part of England you're looking at, whether people are feel that strongly about their religion or about their wives.
Okay,
it just depends on
very vague.
Have to be. I'm English.
Oh, yes. Okay. So, we're talking about food here. how would you typify English food? I know you mentioned at the beginning that you considered it a bit bad, but I'm surely nowadays it's not that bad.
Well, if you had to sort of... Most other countries, you could talk about French cuisine, there's Italian cuisine, but when it comes to English food, there isn't really very much that I see as typically English. There's bangers and mash, there's fish and chips.
Yes.
But, you know, when you look at those, they're not what people would see as sort of as healthy meals. I mean, sausages and mashed potatoes, fried sausages, a lot of fat. There's a lot of fat in fish and chips. You look at a lot of the English and you wonder why they're all relatively overweight because of the diet. Whereas, you know, the Mediterranean diet is far more healthy. They eat more salads. There's more to the English.
And recent music, English music, is it the same like the Beatles, or what? How would you typify that now?
No, I think it's very, very different. I think there's so many different genres of music now that go across the whole spectrum. But I think that something like the Beatles will be timeless, whereas other songs will be here today, gone tomorrow. But I think that the Beatles will always be that kind of music, that kind of song will sort of, it never ages. But I mean, there've been some great bands. I mean, there's the Rolling Stones and all the others that came out. And, I think there's Leona Lewis, which was recently, the last 2 or 3 years. So there's quite a variety.
Okay. And when we think of England, I tend to think of London.
Mm-hmm.
Is that England for you?
No.
Why?
It's very, very cosmopolitan. I think that sort of, for me, I could never live or work in London. It's far too busy. The people are very, very impersonal. Everybody's just concentrating on themselves and going to work. And there's other parts of England, which are sort of more homely, more inviting.
Going back to how you define an English person at the beginning as being more polite and able to help,
yeah.
While characteristically for you in London it's not the same.
No.
But I do think that in England it tends to be a mix of people, a good mix of people.
It's becoming more and more so. I mean, unfortunately, there's still the individual communities. We've sort of got in the north in Bradford, you've got a large Asian community, but they're all sort of stuck together. But I think that more and more they're trying to mix and to integrate.
One of the things that I like is English humour.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I love it.
I think it's an acquired taste. I think for a lot of students, it's quite difficult because it's so dry, and you need to appreciate and understand the humour, otherwise it becomes quite difficult. But
can you give us an example?
I'm trying to think of a good. I can't think of a.
That's okay. How about the characteristics? You know, like you just told us about the Yorkshire guy. You know.
Yeah, I think one of the typical things is that the English. As I said before, they don't really say what they feel, and you go to meet an English person, and he'll say, "Hi, how are you?" And he'll say, "Fine," and his arm could be hanging off, and there could be blood pouring out, but it's just a standard response. And I think that if you actually said to somebody and told them how you felt, I think the English would be quite shocked because they wouldn't know how to deal with it. If you told them, "Well, actually, I'm feeling quite sad or depressed," they would sort of be shocked. I didn't expect to hear that.
Brilliant.
They're quite reserved in that way.
So if I had to meet someone and tell them, listen, I've had a really bad day, they'd get totally like, okay.
They'd be shocked. They'd be lost for words, and they'll find a way to sort of to say, I'm really busy, or I've got to go, or they wouldn't know how to respond. And I think that's sort of, it's quite typical.
One of the things I have a problem with when learning a language, besides the behavior of the people,
mm-hmm.
is the way you take a word,
yeah.
and then you insert it into a sentence, and
yes.
it has a totally different meaning.
Yes.
I remember teaching a student, I mean, he was CEO of a massive company in Germany, and he was standing before me, and he was saying, because, you know, I'm a vegetable. And I was looking at him thinking, no, that can't be true. I'm sorry, I told him, can you repeat that, please? And he goes, what's the problem? I'm a vegetable. What he meant there was, I'm a vegetarian, obviously.
Yes.
But with our limited language, sometimes we get ourselves into all these messes.
Yes. I mean, I had a student who had a similar sort of situation, and he was trying to express the fact that he felt comfortable, and he said, I feel myself well. And for him, that was, and I had to say to him, you know, you can't express yourself in that way because it has a completely different connotation. And he'd obviously translated it directly, a little bit like the Germans sort of say, I become a beer, because they've translated it directly, and we sort of say, no, but that means to change into a beer.
It's difficult, isn't it?
So it's difficult to get those nuances, and, you know, there's quite a few with what we call the false friends, where they believe, okay, that's the word in Italian or in French, and they translate it. Sometimes it works, and a lot of the time it doesn't, and it makes for a lot of the time where people sort of, a lot of the
That's how you have your humour.
Yes, exactly. The people make fun of people, and the
which is an English characteristic.
Yes, it's because again with the English where you've got same word, completely different spelling, with same pronunciation, so they end up with sort of with a play on words that the people start to get caught out by. A lot of the successful British films, Notting Hill, Four Weddings and a Funeral, About a Boy, all of those have been based on typical, for me, sort of English humour. I mean, one of the most recent films was Death at a Funeral, and, you know, you sort of, well, what else do you expect to find at a funeral? But that was sort of, it was typical, very dry humour. That either you appreciate it or some people find that it's not really for them. But
I know that is part of the different acquired tastes, yes, we have to have, yes, towards these different languages. Thank you, Richard, for coming on today. That's the end of our program for today.
Thank you very much
for listening to us. That was Michelle Kalmatin here from the International School of Languages.